Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video, I am bringing you two different Deep Woods horrifying park ranger stories, both which reside in the state of Nevada. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. The drive through this part of Nevada was beautiful. The tall cliffs were lined by majestic pines, while the road leisurely wound through the scenery. But no matter how amazing the view was, it couldn't change the fact that I was out here to deal with something incredibly unpleasant. My brother Jason worked as a park ranger until he suddenly went missing one night. No one knows exactly what happened. From all appearances, he seemed to have gotten up from the ranger station to check on something routine and never came back. There was an extensive search, but nothing turned up. The ranger station had been found exactly as it should be. There was no signs of a struggle, no strange tire tracks or footprints leading away from the park, and no eyewitnesses were reported seeing Jason anywhere after that. So here I was, trying to do what anybody in my family wanted me to do and see if I could find anything. Was I optimistic? Not really. But stranger things have happened in life. All I knew was I was here to look around, and that was what I was going to do. It was late afternoon by the time I arrived at my destination. The town the park was located by was as average as could be. A main street lined with a variety of shops and stores, and residential areas that branched off it. A place you've seen on 1,000 brochures and postcards. I parked in front of the local pizza restaurant. Not only was I hungry, this would be a great opportunity to see what people around here were like. If they were open and welcoming, I'd know what I was dealing with. If not, that meant something was up, and I would get out of here as quickly as possible. The pizza place had a few customers this time of day, so I got right into a table in the middle of the restaurant. I decided on a medium pepperoni pizza and relaxed in my seat while sipping my water. Once I was done eating my pizza, which was very good, I paid the bill and left a generous tip, heading to the park my brother had worked at for 2 years until he vanished one night. The park looked like any other I'd seen. Well-maintained, neat, and orderly. The kind of place you would like to have a picnic in. But of course, nature is like anything else. What you see on the surface is only a fraction of what is really going on. I drove up the neatly landscaped driveway and parked in front of the ranger's station. My shoes crunched on the gravel as I got out of the car and approached the building. I was expecting an old rustic cabin, but the ranger station was relatively modern, with large bay windows and a gleaming metal facade. I approached the front door, knocked, and waited. A moment later, it opened up to a man in a ranger uniform who looked at me. "How could I help you?" he asked. "I'm Alex, Jason's brother. I'm here for some information." "Oh, I see. Come right in." The ranger held the door open and pointed to a sitting area. I'll let my boss know you're here. Can I get you something to drink? I'm fine, thank you. All right, we'll be right with you. And with that, the ranger hustled down the hallway and I was alone. I hadn't given anyone a heads up I was coming. I didn't want anyone to prepare for my arrival. My brother had gone missing several weeks ago. It was just a question of why. I don't believe he just ran off for no reason. So that meant there had to be a reason why. And everyone, me included, wanted to know what that was. Since he went missing at work, it seemed obvious to be work-related. But it was entirely possible that it was connected to something else. It could have been something that he encountered while at work, but had nothing to do with the job itself. Personally, I had never been a huge fan of camping or anything like that. I certainly appreciate nature, but I'm definitely more of a stay inside and read a book type. Jason was always much more enthusiastic about the outdoors, and it wasn't a surprise to anyone when he became a park ranger. Just like it was no surprise to anyone when I became an architect. And here we were. At that moment, an older man who was also in a ranger's uniform came out and faced me. Alex? Yes. I'm Tim, park manager. He shook my hand firmly. Nice to meet you, I said. Likewise. Jason was a good ranger and we all liked him. So if I could be of any help, don't hesitate to ask. I appreciate that. And what I need now is information. Tim nodded. Of course. Why don't you follow me to my office? He led the way to his office, a small room with a neat view of the park entrance. Once I sat down in the chair facing his desk, and he leaned back in his desk chair, we started talking again. I would love to say we had new information for you, but we don't. And it bothers me. We've never had an incident like this in the history of this park. I see. The only other thing I could think to add is that about a week or so ago after he vanished, I was out on my route checking on things, and I could feel someone watching me. Just for a moment, but it was there. And I had no idea who was responsible. Because when I looked around, I didn't see anyone. Interesting. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Not at all. What do you think happened to your brother? I've thought about that a million times. The honest answer is I don't know. But I don't believe he just ran off. That isn't Jason. That's fair. And for what it's worth, I don't believe it either. All right, now it's my turn to ask you something. What are the odds that something happened to Jason out here? Tim paused as he considered my question. Somewhat possible. I've always liked working here, but the woods are the woods, and things happen out here. No doubt. Okay. The next logical step is to think if anything happened in the woods. Where exactly was it most likely? Are there any locations around here something odd tends to happen at? Places people tend to steer clear of if they can avoid it. It doesn't have to be in the park, but around town? Tim chuckled. Oh, that would be the old quarry. No doubt about it. Or more exactly, what's left of the old quarry. You know, mining used to be a big industry out here. I do. What happened at the old quarry? That I think of? The usual things people would prefer to forget, and that's just what we know of. Can you point me towards it? Tim stood from his desk. I could do better than that. I could show you where it is. Great. Tim led the way in his truck, and we were there in 15 minutes. We parked on a small cliff overlooking the quarry itself, which was now filled with water. A group of 5 people were sitting further down on the cliff, and they glanced at the 2 of us with slight interest when they saw our cars pull up. When we got out of our vehicles, we briefly glanced at each other, and Tim gave me a slight nod of encouragement. Then I stepped forward. "I'm looking for some information. My brother's gone missing. He was a park ranger. If you could help, you'd be compensated for it." Then I took out my phone, pulled up a picture of Jason, and held it up so they could see it. The group all looked at the photo for a second. After a moment, I saw one of the guys do a double take. "I've seen him," the guy nodded, "less than a month ago." I got chills as he said this, because that would be right around the time Jason went missing. "Where was he?" "The Wistful Pines Inn." "It's a hotel about an hour away," Tim said. "What was he doing?" "Nothing in particular, just hanging around near the road from what I could tell. But from the look in his eyes, he seemed very focused on something." "Thank you for your help." I reached into my pocket and gave him a $100 bill. Then Tim and I headed for the Wistful Pines Inn. It was your typical roadside motel with 2 stories and a swimming pool in front. There was also a small sign advertising where the front office was. So I headed there while Tim stayed in his truck. Standing at the front desk was an older woman with long silver hair.
"Hello, how can I help you?"
she asked politely.
"My brother went missing in the area about a month ago, and I was wondering if maybe you had seen him here?" Then I showed her the photo. There were no signs she had ever seen him before.
"No, I'm sorry, I don't recall seeing him here."
I put my phone away.
"Thank you."
"But that doesn't mean he wasn't here. That just means I didn't see him. What was his name?"
I gave her Jason's full name, and she deftly typed it into the computer in front of her and paused for a moment.
"Nope, nothing in our records either. We don't have security cameras, so there's nothing to check after that, I'm afraid."
"I really appreciate your help. It was a long shot anyways."
"A tip?"
She nodded.
"I see. Well, your tip may be right after all, because strictly between us..."
Her voice lowered a bit.
"A film crew was staying here for about a week while they were in the area to film part of a documentary. They haven't been seen since the night before last."
The idea settled in the air uneasily as she pressed a few buttons on the computer before turning the screen so I could see it. On it was a local news article about the film crew who was in town to do a piece about abandoned mines. The film crew all looked to be close to me in age, and by all appearances, they seemed happy and content.
"Thank you for telling me."
"Sure. I have no idea what happened, but good luck with finding your brother. Come back if you need anything else."
"Thank you."
Then I left the office and told Tim what I had found. He sat there quietly for a moment before he started talking. "We've dealt with a lot of people wanting to get footage of this or that over the years. It's amazing, really, how nature can be dangerous enough when you know what you're doing and have tons of experience."
"No doubt.
Is it possible that they disappeared not just because they were filming, but because of what they were filming?"
Tim considered it for a moment.
"Absolutely."
"Just a thought."
"No, I get it. It's a valid question. We have no idea what they were filming, but we could always double check. It's certainly possible they were filming something completely routine and stumbled onto something they weren't intended to."
I shivered slightly at that thought.
One person going missing could have many explanations. Two going missing doesn't have as many possibilities. But a number of scenarios could have happened depending on the circumstances. But a group? That's inherently unsettling because it strongly suggests something bad happened. But with nothing left to go on, I had no choice but to call it a day. Especially since I had actually accomplished something since I got here. So I grabbed some dinner at a local diner and planned to go back to my hotel room. I had just gotten in my car when there was a knock on my driver's side window. My jaw dropped when I looked up and I saw Jason. He was dressed casually in clothing that looked a little beaten up, but there was no mistaking my brother. I immediately opened the door and climbed out of the car so I could take a good look at Jason. His clothing were worn, he had been spending a lot of time outdoors, and he looked a little gaunt, but it was him. I never thought I'd see Jason again. I thought he was lost forever, so I was ecstatic to see him. I could barely believe this was happening. "Good to see you, Alex," he said nonchalantly, as if our meeting was the most routine thing in the world. "What is going on here?" I failed to keep the shock out of my voice. "I ran."
"From what?"
"Them." The simplicity of the response was chilling. It said so little and so much at the same time.
"Them?"
I asked. Let's just say I was out in the woods, and it turned out I wasn't alone. I barely got away.
"The film crew that vanished?"
"I don't know anything about that, but it doesn't surprise me. We need to get out of here, right now." From the look in his eyes, I knew Jason was seriously afraid of something. And since I had accomplished what I had set out here to do, I had no reason or desire to stay. So I got in the car, he hopped in beside me, and I pulled out of the parking lot.
"How did you know I was here?" I asked him once we were heading down the road.
"I've seen you around town."
"Where should we go?"
"Away from here."
"Got it. Can I ask why?"
"Of course. While working at the park, I heard rumors of the area's past. By now, I'm sure you know it used to be a prosperous mining area a few decades ago. Or at least it was, until there was a nasty accident that resulted in the mining company closing down after a bunch of people died in the mine after there was a cave-in. I heard rumors that there was a few people that survived the accident, but never came out of the mine and vanished into the hills. I'd always considered it just a campfire story, until one night a few weeks ago. A group of people came out of nowhere, chased me into the cave, and I thought I'd never get out. When I was finally able to escape, I was in the middle of nowhere, and I had to use my outdoors experience to find my way back here. Especially since I had no idea how many were out there or if I was being followed. This was why everyone thought I had disappeared.
If anyone could make it through that, it would be you.
Appreciate that. The road we were on had narrowed down to one lane, and I was acutely aware that we were surrounded by tall trees on this stretch of road. But when the road turned and I saw the road was blocked by a massive fallen tree, my stomach clenched, and I felt my blood freeze in my veins. I tried to back up, but when I did, I felt the tires run over something, and I knew they would be flat in no time at all. I didn't dare get out of the car. This is what whoever was behind this wanted. So I took a deep breath and looked outside. Darkness had settled on the area, and there was only a few streetlights illuminating the road out here. But even that was enough light for me to see some shadows moving at the far end of the road by the woods coming slowly towards us. The sight made me grip the steering wheel so hard my knuckles turned white. What do we do?
I managed to ask Jason. Stay calm. They want us to panic.
Before he could say another word, headlights blazed alive out of a cluster of trees to our right, and I thought for sure the vehicle they belonged to was going to crash straight into us. But I watched as the vehicle in question, a small RV, roared past us, parked alongside us on the curb, and the driver's side window rolled down. I got another shock when I realized it was one of the members of the missing film crew.
Get in!
She yelled to us. She didn't need to tell us twice. Jason and I immediately got out of my rental car and ran to the RV's door and climbed inside. Once Jason slammed the door shut, the driver immediately took off and we were out of there. As I tried to catch my breath, I found myself face to face with the rest of the film crew who were sitting comfortably around the RV's interior.
Thanks, I said once I sat down on the floor.
No problem,
a woman with curly blonde hair who was sitting in the armchair said. We've been watching what they were up to for hours. We knew they were up to something. We were just waiting for them to act so we could do something about it.
Is that why no one's seen you guys for a while? Jason asked.
A guy sitting on the couch nodded.
Yes, we stumbled upon them while researching a different abandoned mine, and it became the subject of our footage.
Are you that park ranger who went missing?
Uh-huh.
Jason said. I stumbled across them too.
Jason and the film crew talked for the rest of the drive until we eventually made our way back to town and went straight to the police. After we explained what had happened and the film crew showed them the footage they had, the police went out to where my rental car had been left on the road. It was just as we had left it. They searched the area thoroughly, and nothing ever turned up. But at least now everyone knows to be alert. And that's something. After that, Jason came home, and everyone was beyond stunned by what had happened. No one was surprised when he took another park ranger job, but this time much closer to home. The documentary the crew had been working on was eventually released and won some awards. Jason and I even went along for a few showings to talk to the audience. It was definitely a unique experience.
It had been a slow day at work. What your day looks like when you're a park ranger depends on where your park is, what the weather is like, what time of year it is, and who happens to be at the park. The park I worked at is in western Nevada, so we get a lot of tourists and people on road trips. I had a free hour for lunch, so I went to the local deli and got myself a turkey sandwich with Dijon mustard and some potato salad. When I went back to work and made my rounds, that was when I saw it. I briefly turned my head and looked out of my truck, when I saw two people slowly walking towards the outskirts of the park. There was nothing there, or at least, nothing was supposed to be there, so I decided to take a closer look. After I radioed my other rangers about what I had seen and where I was, I slowly climbed out of the truck and followed them. We had dealt with more than our fair share of trespassers over the years, and this wasn't exactly out of the ordinary. As I carefully followed at a distance, I noticed they were both young guys in their 20s. Since they were both wearing shirts from the local college, it was safe to say they were college students. They both walked carefully ahead, as if they knew exactly where they were going and had a purpose. I wasn't sure how I felt about that, because it meant they weren't just exploring with no goal in mind. They were up to something. So I kept an extra close watch as I followed them as they were amongst the trees that lined the park. After a few minutes, I turned around the bend in the woods they had gone behind and found myself alone. I couldn't believe it. Where had they gone? I kept my eye on them the whole way. So what happened? I took a deep breath and thought logically. They must have gone somewhere that was hidden in some way. So I looked around and tried to figure out what that could be. It looked like your typical stretch of woods. Plenty of trees around, some rocks, and a few fallen tree branches scattered around. On a whim, I decided to take a closer look at a small pile of rocks clustered together on the ground. I moved them around, and it didn't take me long to find that the rocks concealed an entrance to a small cave that formed a makeshift tunnel. I shot my coworkers a text with a picture of both the rock pile and the tunnel, and the general location before I turned my flashlight on and climbed down into the tunnel. It was a narrow drop of just a few feet, and I landed easily on the damp floor. None of us had any clue this was here, so I was exploring uncharted territory. All I could do was follow the tunnel, which I did. To my surprise, it didn't last long, because after roughly a half a mile, it ended and opened up into sunshine. Once my eyes adjusted, I realized I was at the very edge of the park, because I was looking at the massive pile of rocks that stood near the massive fence that signified the end of the park. Thanks to the wetness of the tunnel, I could see footprints where the two college students had climbed the rocks. So I did the same, taking care to climb with caution. Once I had reached the top and looked down, I could see that concealed behind the rocks was a tiny bit of overgrown grass. But within that bit of grass was a gap underneath the park fence that a person could climb under. So I sent more pictures to my coworkers before I climbed down the rocks and crawled through the gap in the fence. And what I saw made my jaw drop. Because the area on the other side of the gap was surrounded on all sides by massive boulders that were impossible to climb. They were jagged and sharp, and beyond the rocks, the land was almost completely flooded by the man-made lake that was built here about 20 years ago. But within the boulders, hidden from view, was a tiny bit of land that contained a small cemetery. But not any ordinary cemetery. I'd been in numerous cemeteries before throughout my life, and they never bothered me. It's easy to forget, but many people throughout history never made it to a formal cemetery, as they were just buried in the ground and that was it. Today, cemeteries are well manicured, neat, and peaceful places where people can come and remember loved ones who passed on. Modern cemeteries can also be very beautiful in terms of artwork and design. Definitely very different from abandoned hospitals, prisons, and places like that, which are far creepier than any modern cemetery. Not this one. This place wasn't intended as a peaceful place to remember and honor those who had passed on. It was a place nature had made steady progress to reclaim, with overgrown weeds everywhere, and graves and tombstones badly weathered by the elements to say nothing of the rocks and the water surrounding it. But more than how it looked, what stuck out was how it felt. I felt uneasy, which I had never felt in a cemetery before. The air was thick, and there was no sense of respectful remembrance to be felt anywhere you looked. At best, this was a place people had worked hard to forget, which means there had been a reason people wanted to forget. By definition, that meant this place was the opposite of what a cemetery was supposed to be. The wrought iron fence that surrounded the area had long since rusted and fallen apart, and the grass was dry, overgrown, and filled with weeds everywhere you looked. That meant
The smaller tombstones close to the ground were impossible to see unless you were really close and tried to move the weeds away from the stone. That is, if there was even a tombstone left. Because despite the weeds, there were places where the headstones had been reduced to rubble. There were also a few statues here and there. They were probably impressive at one time, but now their features were all worn away by the elements. Only the insects flying around made the place seem like it hadn't been completely abandoned. The entrance was flanked by two brick columns that were badly weathered and looked like they were one bad storm away from complete collapse. But that was it. There was no iron or stone archway with the name spelled out of anyone to see, and it was entirely possible this place didn't even have a name. Nothing about this place seemed real. When combined with the day's heat, it made everything seem like a vivid daydream. In fact, my first reaction was that it may have been left from a film crew from years ago, as filmmakers have been known to shoot various projects out here over the years. But somehow, that didn't seem right. I took care as I stepped around not to accidentally step on a grave and fall. So I walked through the rows, unsure of what exactly to do or think. So it wasn't long before I reached the end and was staring up at what the final bit of space was taken up by. It was a mausoleum, solid gray stone with iron trim. Even in a typical cemetery, it would have stood out. But here, amidst the almost unnatural isolation and disregard, the mausoleum seemed otherworldly. In the tiny space, it felt massive, with stone walls that had started to crack, and double doors flanked by cement columns that held up an archway. I could just barely make out the name Smith stamped on it. The double doors were made of glass covered, which was probably decades worth of dust and dirt, and the iron frame of the doors looked almost completely rusted by now. I stood there for a moment while I studied it. The passage of time only contributed to making it more fascinating. Who was it for? What did it mean? You don't build something like this only for it to be forgotten. There had to be a reason why that happened. Here out west, ghost towns are a common thing. So was this cemetery just part of that? I would believe that if it wasn't for the mausoleum. You don't build something like that just to forget about it. And this place was about as far removed from a potter's field as you could get. Even in its present state, anyone could see this place was full of character. The other thing I immediately noted was that the two college students had to be inside. There was nowhere else they could have gone. So I carefully approached the mausoleum and opened the rusty, wrought iron door. The air was muggy and filled with dust and numerous spiderwebs that glimmered when caught by my flashlight. The floor was gray stone. The tomb containing the mausoleum's occupant was located in the middle of the room and was covered in a heavy white stone slab. But there was no sign of the two students I followed here. I was about to see if I missed something when I saw it. Hidden behind a column was a gap in the wall and a narrow set of steps that led to a level below. With my flashlight in hand, I climbed down the steps and could feel that I was descending further into the earth. I made sure to take each one as carefully as I could. There were more cobwebs and dust everywhere you looked. Everything smelt damp, but it was surprisingly cool down here, which was a pleasant surprise against the intense heat of the day. Where could this be leading to? Some kind of catacomb? My mind wondered more with every step I took. After a minute, the steps ended, and I found myself standing in what looked to be a small crypt. But more importantly, I saw the two college students sitting on the floor with their back to me.
From the faint glow flickering from where they were sitting, I could tell they had lit some candles. "What are you doing?" I asked calmly. The two of them shot upright so fast it was funny. They quickly turned to face me, and I could practically hear them frantically trying to decide what to say. "We were just..." one of them stammered out. "Look, you two, I don't really care what you guys do here because it's not on the park property, but you came through the park to get here, which means you came through the park that I work for to get here and get to something, which unfortunately makes it my business. So let's go." What I didn't say was that I didn't quite know what they were up to, but I didn't like it. What I didn't say was I didn't quite know what they were up to, but I didn't like it. I've been on the job long enough to know when someone was up to something, and these two telegraphed it. They had been doing something with candles and other stuff that smelled funny on the floor, and plenty of people had attempted rituals in the park before for me to recognize it. Although, these two looked far more the harmless thrill-seeker type than the serious troublemakers we sometimes encounter, so I wasn't worried. Probably out here on a dare. And as I expected, the two of them immediately complied as I pointed them up the stairs. And I followed them up to the mausoleum entrance and we stepped back out into the fresh afternoon air. I was thrilled to be out of that place because, quite frankly, it gave me the creeps. This whole place did. So I wasted no time in crawling back through the gap in the fence and climbed on the other side of the rock wall until I was back at the park. Once the two of them had followed me, I turned my flashlight on and we walked back through the tunnel formed by the cave. After I climbed back through the opening and the other two had done the same, I closed it back up and walked to where my coworker Marine was waiting for me as a precaution. I gave her a wave to show all was good, and she waved back and returned to the ranger station. I already gotten word that they would make sure the tunnel would be sealed shut so no one could access it. Then all that was left for me was to make sure the two college students were escorted to the park entrance. I let them walk there while I followed them in my truck. They didn't say much since I found them, and that was just fine with me. Once they stood just inside the park entrance, near the car they had driven here, I told them that the tunnel entrance would be sealed off and the gap in the fence would be fixed. So that was the last time they would be exploring the cemetery. Then I told them I didn't care what they did in their free time, as long as they didn't cause problems here, and turned around and walked back to the ranger station after I watched their car drive away. Later that day, I went back to where the tunnel was to show the crew where it was, and what it led to so they could seal it off. But as I was leading them back to the end of it, I raised my flashlight and practically jumped back in shock. There was a huge group of bats hanging from the ceiling, but that's not what was odd. It was the fact that the bats hanging there on the ceiling didn't move an inch. They didn't have no reaction to our flashlights or our presence. No matter what we did, they simply hung there in a thick cluster. You couldn't even see the cave ceiling for how many were clustered there. It was uncanny how still they all were. If you didn't know better, you'd swear they weren't real. I'd never had a problem with bats in general, but that didn't mean I wasn't wary of being swarmed by them. Especially when they were just hanging there quietly, even though they had to be aware of our presence. So we took care to walk as carefully as we could, all the while keeping an eye on the cave ceiling. The ceiling itself contained a few stalactites, but apart from that, it was pretty flat and even, which meant the bats were pretty much one even row across another, which is what made the effect so uncanny. I managed to show everyone what I had seen. Then we all got out of there and returned to the ranger station, where I had a bottle of water. Then I started talking with my colleagues about what had happened. They agreed what had happened had been odd, and that the two of them had been up to something, but they had no idea what the history on the old cemetery was. In fact, they didn't even know it was there. But even after they tried to find some information on the cemetery, nothing turned up. It was odd. But as often the case in this line of work, time went on and I forgot about it. Or at least, I did until about a month later. I was in the mall after work doing some shopping, as my best friend's birthday was coming up and I was getting him a present. Once that was taken care of and I had gotten myself a coffee, I turned the corner and came face to face with one of the college students. I took in his appearance, and he looked exhausted, or exhaustion looked like part of the problem, because he also looked on edge. I could feel the nervous energy just looking at him. He didn't say a word the entire time, just looked at me like I was a reminder of something, but what that was only he knew. But what really stuck out to me was what he was doing. I bumped into him as he was coming out of a store, and I could see that he had bought a ton of sage, the kind you burn like incense, which he had also bought along with a number of other things that I didn't recognize. But they were all the type of things you could get from a store nearby that sold along with other things like crystals, salt lamps, and books on meditation. I gave him a polite nod, stepped out of his way, and carried on with what I was doing. And I was relieved that we had sealed up the way to the access of that old abandoned cemetery. I never did see him or his friend again, but I sincerely hope whatever he bought gave him some peace of mind.